Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now rocking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Ladies and gentlemen, it is here. The 2022 NFL Draft is finally upon us, so we're going to dive into some of that. We'll get a little quarterback talk with Mark Schofield from the NFL Wire of USA Today Digital Media Group. And we're going to keep that going because, you know, to have good quarterback play, well, what do you need? You need protection up front. So we're going to dive into the trenches with Owen Reese of the East-West Shrine Bowl. We'll get into that. And when those two things are working, you could get the ball down the field to who? Your wide receivers. And that's exactly why Run TMC, Chris Sanders, Forever Titans receiver, will be on as well. Let me get that music.
TMC. For you. Fresh.
You know what I need. Strings, please. What goes up must go down. So the music fades. The lights dim. Do, 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 do. And now, for your Chicago Bulls, starting at shooting guard, wearing number 0, from Duke, Luol Deng.
And now, starring in the color purple, Danny Glover.
You just gonna let that woman sit there and talk to you like that?
What's up, man?
What's going on?
The draft is here. What the heck is going to happen at 26, baby?
Ooh, there's no telling. But that's what we're going to get into. I'm going to give three options. You give three options.
Got it.
And I think after we do that, we'll talk a little bit about Ryan Tannehill.
Stop it.
That's what we'll do. Because one of my three options, now I'm going to give three options and I'll give a wild card. So
gotcha.
I'll throw the wild card out there. I'll go one option. You go one option.
Good deal.
I'll start it up. Kenyon Green, Texas A&M guard. I think he is an ideal fit. Now you'll hear some people say, hey, you don't draft a guard in the first round. But as we said in the intro, a quarterback needs protection up front. Yes. One of the things that they like to do when they push the ball down the field, because what's everybody saying the Titans need? They need a vertical passing game, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you need to be able to step up into the pocket and deliver the throw and not worry about your hand hitting the helmet because your interior guy is getting driven back. Hey, I think Kenyon Green is somebody, but most importantly, he allows this team to maintain what they want to do as far as running the football because he's a nasty blocker.
And you know what's funny, TD, is because they say great minds are alike. Guess who I'm going with? I'm going with Trevor Penning from Northern Ireland. Mm. Straight up dog, straight up nasty. The one thing I love about him is he's a true enforcer. He's going to enforce pain on people. It's kind of like when he was in the Senior Bowl, every other play, everybody wants to fight him. Don't you want a guy like that? I'm not talking about hitting after the pile. I'm not talking about doing stuff off the field crazy. But in between those trenches, he's trying to choke the mess out of you. So I think he's a variable guy. He's versatile. He can play guard and he can play tackle. So my number one guy I would like to see them pick is Trevor Penning.
Yeah, I think that would be an excellent match. Now, Penning is my number 4 tackle. Some say he can play some guard, but, I mean, if you pick him, that's your right tackle. Eventually flipping him over to the left side once Luan is done. And coincidentally, he is a guy that when I talked to him at the combine, I asked him, I said, Trevor, who is it that you watch a lot of and kind of model your game after? Mm-hmm. He said Taylor Lewan.
Wow.
So there you have it right there. I like him as an option. I'm not going to put him in my 3 because I think he's going to be gone. But the next guy I'll go to is Zion Johnson out of Boston College. Now, obviously, he was Tyler Vrabel, which is Mike Vrabel's son. He was his roommate for a couple of years at Boston College. It's funny, you know, this guy's a former golfer. He played golf, and then, you know, he was at Davidson, and he said, well, you know, I'm going to transfer to Boston College, take a shot. And he morphed into this first-round prospect at guard and center, and he could also play tackle. Now, Kenyon Green, that's another thing with him. He could play four out of the five positions. Center is the one that he hasn't played.
Right.
But now you have a guy in Zion Johnson who was willing to take extra reps after practice at the Senior Bowl and take reps during practice, you know, during one-on-ones at center. I like that dedication. And I asked him about that dedication. He said, well, you know what? The reason why I – you know, I'm able to do that because I love football. And when you love football, you're always going to put in whatever necessary work. And then the other thing about loving football is when times get rough, you have that to fall back on. I was like, man, that's a profound answer for a young man like yourself. And he's very solid at pass protection. You know, you even saw him bump out to left tackle. So I think, you know, that's a good option for the Titans as well.
Yeah, my number two is, I mean, they're in the Big Ten, and I don't like this team, but it's the guy's from Iowa. It's Tyler Linderbaum.
Ah.
And the reason why I like this guy, man, he's polished. I mean, he's polished already. He knows, he understands angles, he understands technique. And here, when you're playing the offensive line or you're playing offensive guard, you got to make sure you have great leverage. And if you look at him, he always has great leverage, and he has that quick punch to really knock the DN or somebody off. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know what? He's not as good as Trevor Penning, but if one of those guys was sitting there, I don't think he would lose with having one of those guys.
Yeah, no, that's a really good pick, and that's someone that I would consider. We've now mentioned four players, and they've all been linemen, you know, and three of them are interior guys. So
but see, the thing, TD, we got to understand that the identity of the Tennessee Titans,
right,
they're run first. So I understand everybody wants to get receivers, and I know me and you probably going to pick receivers after this, but if you can't protect and you can't run the ball, the receiver's just going to be waving to the quarterback while he's on his back. You see what I'm saying? So I understand that it's not the picks that we made are not a sexy pick, but at the end of the day, if you can protect and run the football, then those receivers can get open.
Yeah, no doubt about it, no doubt. And I think when you look at Linderbaum, he's a guy that he could start out at guard and then bump over to center. And it's funny because I asked Ben Jones about that when he was available, was it a week and a half ago? He was available for the start of phase one of OTAs because he started out as a right guard. But he was one of the – it's very funny because it's the same situation. Ben Jones was one of the top centers in that class. Tyler Linderbaum is clearly the top center in this class. There's a good chance that neither one of them start out at the position that they're a top prospect at, you know, and eventually he could slide over. Now, for me, number three, you know, there's a couple different names. Chris Olave is obviously a guy that would, you know, would be ideal, but I don't see him making it past. I think he's a top 15 guy. For the sake of I wonder if Treylon Burks, if the Packers don't go his way.
I know.
Because they, you know, they love those guys that get yards after the catch, and he's very good at that. I'm going to go ahead and say Burks, and we'll just, you know, imagine him going. It's very possible. We'll put it that way.
Right.
And I think when you get a guy like Treylon Burks, you're getting the free yards. You're getting a guy that, you know, could play multiple positions. I actually have him as my top rate, or no, my number two Z receiver, and he's my number five slot.
Right.
I have him as a slot. It's like a power slot, right? You know, a guy that you work the middle of the field. Essentially, he'll be like a detached tight end. But the point is he gets you the free yards, the yards after the catch, and it kind of duplicates what you get from A.J. Brown. And these are ways to get those explosive plays with a lower turnover rate. And that's something, obviously, you know, the Titans want to get fixed with Ryan Tannehill after the habit of turning the football over he developed last year.
Yeah, you know, with my third pick, there's a lot of great players in the position, like Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Jamison Wilson from Alabama, Treylon Burks, like what you talk about, Chris Olave from Ohio State, Jahan Dotson from Penn State. But here's a guy that I love and nobody's really not talking about, and it's George Pickens from Georgia.
Yes.
6'3", 195. And I think the reason why nobody's not talking about him that much is because the off-the-field stuff. I understand that's great, but have a veteran come in and really kind of coach him up and teach him about the ins and outs of being a professional. But when you talk about that kid from Georgia, I'm going to tell you something. That kid's a dog. He's polished. He makes plays. He catches the ball at the highest point, and he's nasty. I mean, he'll hit you in the mouth. He'll block. So he's one of those guys that a Vrabel guy that I know he has some stuff off the field. When you're talking about a guy that plays in between the lines, going to hit you in the mouth, is going to make the tough catches, I wouldn't be sad if they went and got George Pickens as opposed to those other guys.
Yeah, George Pickens, actually, that's my number four X receiver. And, you know, he's a guy that I just put on the line of scrimmage. I trust him to, you know, win against press coverage. I trust him to make those vertical receptions, and he will consistently make acrobatic ones, and then you could back shoulder him too. Mm-hmm. So that's a great option. Now, and it's funny because, you know, we always say off the field. The dude has zero rap sheet, right?
That's so what I'm saying.
You know, there isn't anything as far as like a troublemaker. We haven't heard anything coming out of Georgia. Well, we didn't hear anything come out of Georgia by Isaiah Wilson either, but, you know, that's a different show, different conversation. Still, I just wonder, and I've said this before, I love his ability. Really do. I love it. But I just wonder how initially he will fare against the Jalen Ramsey types.
Well, yeah.
And I'm not talking about, you know, the coverage and pressing him. I'm talking about telling him that, you know, his girlfriend, like the who did that to Mello, man? They said Lala tastes like Fruit Loops or Fruity Pebbles.
Uh-oh. That was Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett.
Hey, DMB fighting words.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure how he'll handle that. You know what I mean? So I think that's an area to be concerned about.
Right,
but, I mean, if that's the one thing that you're concerned about,
absolutely.
Hey, I'll take that as compared to everything else he brings to the table.
Right.
So those are three options. Two linemen and a receiver for both of us. Now, my wild card is Desmond Ridder, and that leads us to the next conversation about Ryan Tannehill. You've seen it where, you know, teams decided to move on from a veteran quarterback, a highly paid veteran quarterback, in favor of a guy on a rookie deal, which will allow them to finesse the cap as far as adding more players and not having that one big chunk that they would have to handle. Do you think this is Ryan Tannehill's last year, 2022?
I mean, it all depends on what he does. I mean, right now he's leaving a bad taste in everybody's mouth because he's not showing up to, you know, voluntary workouts and all that stuff, and he's out there fishing and posting on Instagram. But I don't know. It all depends on what he does in the field. If he comes out there and throws for 4,800 yards, 40 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions, you better believe you better keep him because he's playing at a high level. But I think you do bring like a Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati to kind of maybe push him. But the only thing that I'm concerned about Desmond Ridder, I just think we're just seeing Mariota in the making. And the reason why I say he's Mariota in the making, he has speed, he has athleticism, he has a little bit of pocket awareness. But the one thing that he struggled with is inconsistency on ball placement.
Yeah,
if you can't get the ball placed in the right way in college, how are you going to do that in the tight windows at the next level?
That is my one concern with him, the accuracy. Yeah. Now, he's accurate when he's on the move. He's definitely that.
But
I think when you look at, okay, Josh Allen was inaccurate at Wyoming.
Absolutely.
But he managed to find that accuracy. And, you know, the problem is seeing that makes you like, okay, well, maybe that's something Ridder could do, but there have been a lot of quarterbacks that weren't accurate and didn't get more accurate. You usually don't get more accurate in the NFL.
True.
So that is an area for concern. And that's something the Titans are going to have to think about just as far as like what they're going to do. And you're right. Ryan Tannehill next year will ultimately depend on what he does this year.
Absolutely.
But that's not a decision you have the luxury of preparing for right now, right?
Absolutely.
Like you have to, okay – you have to make a choice. All right, do we think he's going to be good this year, or do we think he's going to be the same? And if you think he's going to be good, then, okay, you could fall back and not, you know, pick a guy early. But if you think that he's going to be the same, then you got to pick a guy. So that's a tough choice.
It is. Well, my wild card is, I know you're going to say this, it's kind of wild. I'm looking at tight end. I mean, I'm looking at our tight end position. I know we got Austin Hooper, but look at who else we have. We have Swain, who signed a one-year deal, Izzo and Hudson. I mean, there's some pretty good tight ends that are in this draft, like Trey McBride. You got the cat from UCLA. I can't pronounce the name, Greg DeLucci. You know how to spell it. But then you got, you know, Jeremy Ruckert from Ohio State. You got Charlie Kohler, who I love, from Ohio State, 6'6", 252. So there's some quality guys that can come in and kind of, you know, flex them out a little bit and be a nightmare for the linebackers or those strong safeties. So one of those guys that they see there, maybe that's one of the wild cards.
So who do you select, though? I mean, I think the only guy that you could even – I don't even know that you could fully validate. Like, the only guy that you could even would be McBride.
Yeah.
In the first round, but at 26, that's
– I know. That's my wild card.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's not my certain. That's my wild card.
Yeah.
If nothing else, I mean, you can get a tight end if he's sitting there. I mean, he's athletic. You know, I mean, I'm not saying he's a Jonnu Smith or Denard or Walker, but I just think that he still brings a matchup that benefits the offense.
Yeah, no, he does bring a matchup, and that's what's so crazy about this, because you look at, okay, well, you know, you talk about Jonnu, that's a third-round guy. You know, you talk about Dulcich, he's probably going to be in the second round. You look at Jelani Woods, like it's just crazy how the depth. And even, you know, we talk about these offense, like I brought up two guards. What, you know,
we both did.
You got Luke Gedecky, you know, from Central Michigan that'll probably be around a bit later. Marquise Hayes. No one's talking about Marquise Hayes, but that guy's a player out of Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
And from what I understand, the league really likes him. So,
yeah.
You know, that's another one. You're looking at that like around pick 90. So now you're going back to the same situation as Nate Davis. So it's just really interesting how, you know, the way you have to split hairs as far as picking a guy in the first round is compared to when you pick again. It's a tough thing. We all like to critique what these GMs and scouting departments do. But, man, end of the day, that's a very tough job they have.
It is, because, you know, you got to pick what's best for your team, not for what's the popular pick. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of teams are going to do that, especially with the Tennessee Titans. Just like we saw last year, they picked Raiders. You should have heard Jared. He's like, oh, my goodness. I didn't even know who that was, but that was best fit for who they thought was for the identity of the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, yeah. And then really, so do you have any thoughts just about, like, positional, hey, you don't pick this position in the first round, you don't pick that position. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, not really. I just think that, especially for the Tennessee Titans, they got to, if all their guys are gone, then they just need to pick the most available player that they rated the highest at that time. You know, that's kind of what you do. So I think that's what they're going to do, and I think that whoever they pick is going to be kind of cool, man.
I'm going to throw another wild card in there. Mm-hmm. Devin Lloyd, Utah.
Oh, is he a dog? I haven't watched him at all.
He's a really good performer safety, ultra-athletic. Really good inside backer, but he's an inside backer, right? And that's a position that doesn't have the same, you know, weight, so to speak, as some of the others. But that guy's a player, and he's truly, like, he's a top 20 prospect, but he could be there at 26. N'Kobe Dean could be there at 26. So it's going to be really tough, like, when they select that pick, you know, they really have to consider some of the things they have going on in the future as well. But we'll see what happens, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited, though, man. I'm looking forward to working with you on Thursday. And, you know, I hope we have a funny moment with what happened with Jared last year when they picked Raiders and Monty Rice.
Oh, we will.
Have fun tomorrow, man. We're gonna get after this thing.
No doubt about it. So there you go right there. We will be back with a little more talk. It's time to dig into that offensive line. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right. right back from the break. I almost want to just let that continue to play, man. That's like one of those songs that makes your hair stand up. I don't have any on my head, but it's still trying to stand up. But anyhow, we're going to bring in our next guest. And I planted this seed months ago. And I went up to him at the combine and I said, man, listen, I need you. I'm going to need you to talk some quarterbacks. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're going to bring in NFL Wire, NFL analyst, Mark Schofield. Mark, what's going on, man?
You're not lying, Teron, man. You did plant that seed at the combine. It was the first time we bumped into each other out in Indy this year. You reminded me of St. Elmo's late night when we were both finishing up dinner. You wanted to bring me on, so I'm excited to be here. And like you said, a little Metallica there. It got some of the gray hairs that I've got left standing up on this end as well. So excited to hear. It flashes me back to my days, as I'm sure it does with you. But excited to get rolling and talk with some QBs here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, I guess one guy that needs the jolt of energy, he might have to listen to this music, is Ryan Tannehill. You know, we have so much going on just as far as him not being at voluntary OTAs, voluntary portion. He wasn't there. I guess let's start there because, I mean, you've studied a lot of quarterbacks. You know how this thing goes. What are your thoughts on the starting quarterback, the franchise guy, not being there for voluntary?
I mean, I start with that word voluntary, right? I mean, it's not like he's a rookie or a second-year quarterback, a third-year quarterback, somebody on his initial deal that you want to be there to sort of make sure you have that deep understanding of the playbook that you need his, you know, his work there to build that relationship, that chemistry with the receivers. You know, maybe he's thrown to new guys for the first time and you want him in camp to do that. Now, certainly, look, with the acquisition of Robert Woods via that trade, you'd like to see Ryan Tannehill getting that work. Now, maybe they're doing it on their own. But Ryan Tannehill is a veteran. He knows this offense. He knows most of the guys that he's throwing to. And, you know, I'm not too worried about it. You know, as somebody that covered the New England Patriots for a while, Tom Brady rarely showed up to these. And yes, that's Tom Brady. But veteran quarterbacks, I have this understanding and this belief that they know what they need to do. You know, they're professionals at this point. They know the offense. They know the work that needs to be done. So it doesn't worry me too much. Now, that being said, you know, if this lingers, if it's something that continues into the sort of, you know, mandatory type of bits of training camp and preseason work, then it starts to get really worrisome.
So the big reason why that's such an issue is the three interceptions in the Bengals game, the multiple interceptions he threw during the regular season. Obviously, everyone has their own story. Not all interceptions are his fault. But when you look at his overall play, what are your thoughts on Ryan Tannehill and him being a franchise quarterback, a guy that you can win the Super Bowl with?
I mean, I still think, Teron, that Tannehill is a guy you can win a Super Bowl with, is a guy that you can make a deep playoff run with. I think when you look back at previous years in Tennessee, you know, whether it was, you know, last year, I mean, 2 years ago, or for example, he was one of the quarterbacks I was most excited to watch every Monday morning. You know, once that all 22 dropped, you got a chance to see what he was doing in Arthur Smith's offense. One of the things I loved about watching him was, from a structural standpoint, a lot of their RPO concepts, a lot of their play action concepts, tasking him with reading one side, flipping the feet, flipping the hips, getting to the other side, but still throwing on time and in rhythm. And he was able to do that. Some of that sort of fell away. You wonder about a potential brand drain situation with Smith now in Atlanta. And then you look at what he did last year. You see inconsistency with the deep ball. I mean, I think, you know, an adjusted completion percentage last year on throws over 20 yards downfield was just 36.0 according to the Pro Football Focus charted, which placed him 28th in the league, just above Ben Roethlisberger. And, I mean, we all saw Ben last year. Ben didn't exactly have the arm he once did, didn't exactly have the deep ball he once did. And for Tannehill to be down there in Roethlisberger territory is not a great sign. You mentioned the three interceptions in the playoff game against Cincinnati, and certainly they all have a story. And I think the second one, you know, the glance RPO that got deflected by a guy blitzing off the edge is one thing. But the first one and the last one, you see Ryan Tannehill sort of being very deliberate, right? He's reading the concept downfield. The first one in particular, his eyes just bring Jesse Bates right to the football. The third one, obviously the killer late in the fourth quarter, you know, he's late on that throw and allows the defender to break on the catch point and cause a deflection that ends up getting intercepted. And so you wonder, you know, was there a comfort level? Was it worries about protection, what it was that was causing Tannehill to be a bit more deliberate with decisions and reads and throws. But that's something I'm certainly going to be looking for once we get games going in the fall. Like, is he going to be quicker and more decisive, or does that indecisiveness linger into his play next season? And if so, then it's a true cause for concern.
And we're talking to Mark Schofield, NFL Wire of USA Today Sports Media Group. At 26, the Titans sit there. Desmond Ridder is on the board. A, is he the best match for the Titans out of all these quarterbacks? And B, if that is the guy, why should they select him?
You know, that's one that I've come back to a couple of times. I mean, we're all doing our final mock drafts right now, right? And every time I get to the Titans at 26 and I don't have Ridder gone yet, like, man, this makes a lot of sense to me, because you're right. The fit schematically makes a lot of sense. Heck, the fit stylistically. I mean, Desmond Ridder himself told us at the combine that Tannehill is kind of a quarterback that he sees in himself, that he models his game after. And you look at where the tight ends want to be conceptually, right? Play action, some shot plays downfield, use the quarterback's athleticism, some RPO elements. There's a lot in what the Titans do conceptually with what Desmond Ridder did during his entire playing days in Cincinnati. And I do think that that fit makes a great deal of sense. And when you start talking about, let's look at the class as a whole, who fits better in Tennessee than Desmond Ridder? Maybe Malik Willis. But I think even that, I'd say Ridder is probably the better scheme fit for Tennessee than perhaps Willis. I think Willis and the upside, the athleticism, the arm talent, and everything he offers is the guy that I expect to go off the board first. He's the guy I'm most excited to watch when he gets his playing days under him in the NFL. He's the guy that I value the highest on my quarterback board. But as far as a scheme fit, I do love Ridder to the Tennessee Titans at 26. Now, do they do that? That's a much tougher question because, yeah, you know, you look at other areas they could address, right? You know, interior offensive line, for example. When you look at Tennessee from a draft capital position, they won't pick again until 90. Now, maybe, you know, there's somebody you like in that range. You know, maybe there's like a Cole Strange, for example, or some of the other interior offensive linemen, Darren Kennard, for example, that you think you could get somebody at 90. And so you feel that, okay, you could take this one on a quarterback. But if you're drafting Desmond Ridder and he's not going to play right away, you know, is that an efficient use of draft capital? Ultimately, I think you always have to, if you have an opportunity to draft a quarterback that fits, that is a great fit for your system, and particularly to get maybe a year ahead of the decision, which I think is a smart approach for teams, then you take advantage of that opportunity. And so when push comes to shove, if Desmond Ridder's there at 26, I think it makes a great deal of sense for Tennessee.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine how much the draft would explode if that happened. We'll see. I mean, there's a chance he could go 20 to the Steelers, you know, so it's just crazy. And that's the whole thing before we got on here. We were talking about just like the uncertainty, and that's a classic example. But there are other guys, right? So you look at Sam Howell, you look at a Carson Strong, you look even later, Akil Glass. I mean, these are all options, I think, that could be viable eventual replacements for Tannehill. But what are your thoughts on Sam Howell and Carson Strong specifically?
Yeah, I mean, those are two very intriguing prospects. And I think, you know, where I look at it is, if Carson Strong, there's two sort of holdups with Strong. I mean, one is the knee injury history, right? And I know you got a chance to talk to him at the combine. You know, he talked a lot about that knee injury and how he was advised not to play this past year by not just his doctor, but his dad.
That
answer hit me, man. I mean, when his dad's like, no, you should have played this year, you know, that's an answer I kind of like really sort of perked up when I heard that one. But he said, no, I wanted to play with my teammates. I wanted to play one final season with the guys that helped get me here, like Romeo Doves, who's going to get drafted this weekend. And, you know, so if the knee checks out, and I haven't heard anything about a combine recheck or anything, that's going to be a big part of the puzzle. But the other thing is, even if it checks out, he's not the most mobile guy in this draft class. I compared him to Drew Bledsoe, and Drew Bledsoe's a guy that was first overall in 93. I don't know if Drew Bledsoe goes first overall in 2022. I mean, it's a different game. You need that athleticism. You need the ability to move around in the pocket, to create off of structure and outside the pocket. And Strong, perhaps it was just due to the knee injury, but very limited in that regard. But a tremendous arm, And so I don't know if he would be the guy in the first round, but if they decide to go in a different direction in the first round at 26 and he's staring you at the face at 90, if you're satisfied from a medical perspective, that makes sense. I would be firmly in favor of that because I think he's a very talented thrower of the football. And he was asked to do a lot at the line of scrimmage. You remember him telling us he had complete freedom. I mean, he could get into and out of any concept he wanted to with the line of scrimmage. That's rare for a college football quarterback these days. And so I'm a huge fan of Strawn. I like Howell a lot, too. I mean, in my own rankings, I have Strawn just above Howell.
Okay.
But I think Howell showed us this year, okay, you know, we've lost some talent, right? DME Brown's in Washington. We've got Javonte Williams in Denver, Michael Carter in New York. We need some guys to make some plays on the ground. I'll be our second leading rusher, sure. I'll pick up the slack there. And I was very impressed with that. And I think Howell's where he fits best is if you really want to be that downfield passing team, if you want to have that vertical element to your offense off of play action or even just straight drop back stuff, I think that's where he fits best. I think he can do some of that in Tennessee. I like Washington perhaps as a fit for him as well. Maybe even Tampa Bay if they decide, look, we're not so sure about Kyle Trask as the potential heir apparent after Brady. Maybe, you know, Tampa Bay is a fit for him. I do like Kyle. Between the two, I really like Carson Strong.
Okay.
You know, I think they're both very good quarterbacks, but my preference would be Strong.
Are there any other guys that you feel, I mean, we went over three of them. Are there any others that you think would be a match for them?
Yeah, I mean, a guy that really sort of intrigues me is Skylar Thompson out of Kansas State.
Okay.
You know, somebody that didn't play a ton. He had some injuries. Interesting evaluation from that standpoint, but had some really impressive throws throughout his career. I think it was the 2019 season where he put a throw on the money that should have had them beat Texas, and it was dropped. And that was the year that Texas gave LSU everything they had, and LSU went on to win the title. So that was a decent Texas team. You know, he had that throw against LSU in the bowl game this year. And I know LSU was playing with, you know, they were playing with me and you in the secondary. They didn't have anybody left because of injuries and COVID and things like that. But he had a post-over concept. He throws the deep over route, drops it within four defenders. You know, just perfect on the money read and throw. Moves well in the pocket. You know, somebody that's probably going to be there later on day three. Somebody that, like, you know, if Tennessee hasn't addressed quarterback at all and you're sitting there at 205 or even that sixth-round comp pick at 220, and he stared you in the face, I think he makes sense. I like Caleb Ellaby from Western Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really liked talking to him as well. What I love about him is the footwork. So much RPO stuff, and we know Tennessee does that, and I talked about it earlier with Tannehill, and he always had his feet under him. If he had to, you know, run fake to the left, flip the hips and the feet, throw back to the right to hit Sky Moore in that glance route, he always had those feet under him. That's such a huge part of playing the position, and it's something I always look for quarterbacks, particularly for those offenses where you see a lot of those concepts, those RPOs, where you've got to flip those feet, flip those hips, and be able to make those snap throws. And that's a box that he checks that I think meshes well with where Tennessee is. And so certainly in that same range of the draft, 205, 220, those six-round picks, if Caleb Ellaby's there and you haven't addressed quarterback yet, he'd be a good fit as well.
There you go. That's a bunch of options there. I like the Ellaby mention. I'm glad you brought him up. Just in watching Sky Moore, man, I was like, hey,
I mean,
look, you got to love him too because he's getting him the football, you know.
I mean, that's part of what I love, Toronto, about draft season, is seeing guys like that. And the Sky Moore, Caleb Ellaby connection, that was one of those guys, those pairings where I'm like, okay, I can watch these guys a little bit longer. It's the same thing sort of with Strawn and Doves. It's like, I'll spend an extra hour watching some Western Michigan tape.
Yeah.
This is fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So I guess, all right, let's do this on the way out the door. Gun to your head, next year, you have to make a decision for next year at quarterback right now. Do you keep Ryan Tannehill at that high number, or do you release him and get the $17 million cap hit, the dead cap hit?
That's one of those decisions where I'm like, man, I do not envy John Robinson that one bit because, you know, that's going to be a seriously tough call to make. I mean, if you're telling me you're going to get the Ryan Tannehill we saw from a couple of years ago, I think no question. You keep Ryan Tannehill, you ride it out. But if we're going to see the Ryan Tannehill we saw sort of down the stretch, the Ryan Tannehill we saw in that playoff game, I think you might give serious consideration to sort of turning the page here. And, you know, that's why we're having this discussion, the idea of getting that quarterback in now, you know, perhaps Desmond Ridder at 26, getting yourself that fifth-year option so you've got that financial security around it, And yeah, you know, you give Tannehill a year to figure it out. If it doesn't quite come together, then you just turn the page. And I think the fact that we're having this discussion right now maybe tells us where this could be headed over the next couple of days.
No doubt about it. This is exactly, ladies and gentlemen, why I brought Mark on to get this type of in-depth information. And he makes some excellent points in regards to the RPOs and the quarterback being able to flip his feet and hips and make those throws. Those are some of the type of things that you may not think about as you're evaluating quarterbacks, but that's why I brought in one of the best, Mark Schofield, NFL Wire, USA Today, Digital Media Group. I appreciate you coming on. Let them know where they could follow your work and find anything that you have going on.
Well, Teron, it was a blast. Thank you so much for having me on, man. The best way, at the NFL Wire, myself, Doug Farrar, Larry Fitzpatrick, we'll be covering the draft all 3 days over the next couple of days or so. So you'll see all the work coming out from there. But Teron, man, thank you so much. Hopefully it's not another year until we see each other again. But
yeah,
it's not until Indy. Looking forward to catching up again soon, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you, man. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
This is Jefferson. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. Yeah, you here. Welcome to the jungle. Talking with TD. Hey, one place that you could call the jungle is the trenches. That's where it all goes down. And one of my favorite guys to discuss trench warfare with is none other than Owen. And he's actually a scout for the East-West Shrine Bowl. He has some outstanding players out there this past year. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity to talk some shop. Owen, what's going on, man?
What's up, TD? How's it going, man?
Everything is great, man. It's working more and more towards the draft, and this is when you see so many presents be unveiled. I guess when you look at the Titans, right, at 26, I did the NFL Nation mock draft. I had them selecting Kenyon Green. You know, Zion Johnson went a couple picks ahead. He's another guy that I think really fits. But when you look at this Titans offensive line and, you know, their need at left guard, their need at right tackle, how do you think they should go about addressing it?
Yeah, so one of the first things, I was looking at this depth chart, and one of the first issues, right, and the first thing was I saw Dylan Raiden's at right tackle. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. They took Dylan Raiden. And I was like, that's cool. And I was like, wait, like, but why is it Dylan Raiden's? And then you remember the Isaiah Wilson thing, right? So, like, that's the – those two have a lot in common. They're both big and physical, and they're athletic, but that was the – right, like the risk that goes into the draft, right? You put a big investment in Isaiah Wilson and kind of swung for the fences and unfortunately didn't hit much, right? And not a lot of that had to do necessarily with on the field, right, with the stuff with him. But you can see where that hole is, right, and where they're at, why they're at, right? And that's why Dylan Raiden can't go play left guard because their right tackle ain't there, right? So first off the hook, one of the two names came to mind in the first round I thought might be around at 26 in the Titans pick. The first one was Tyler Smith out of Tulsa. Mm. The guy that is very physical in the run game, is a kind of a bully, right? Kind of plays with that nasty demeanor that I always kind of associate with Tennessee, right, in the offensive line. Has some technical stuff to clean up, a few probably too many holding penalties realistically, but a guy with a great skill set, like I said, and just really kind of plays nasty. And he's one of those guys, right? There's certain teams and there's certain identities you can kind of pair guys with throughout the draft process. And, you know, so, well, that guy plays like a Steeler or that guy plays like a Packer, right? Well, Tyler Smith plays like a Titan. So he was one of the first ones that I saw at right tackle. And then another one, and I'd be curious to hear your opinion on this as well, but Daniel Falele from Minnesota, yes, right? The biggest guy in the draft. You know, the need at left guard and at right tackle, right? But I was curious to see your opinion on that, because do you think that John Robinson would go back to the well again with another potential project at right tackle, but a guy with outstanding upside at that size?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I talked to him a little bit at the combine, and he's a massive man, former rugby player. I don't know that they would do that just as far as bringing a guy that's still coming along and developing in the game, as much as picking something closer to a finished project, because they can't really afford to have a guy like they can't afford to miss on another offensive lineman. You know what I mean? Like
right.
they can't do that, and they've had those issues
right.
in the past. So I don't think that even though he's a guy that I would definitely like to see in the mix, I don't think that they would select him. But if you watch, you know, some of the stuff that he was able to do, I mean, you talk about moving people. And they're talking to, Boya Mafe. He told me that, you know, it was a load going against him in practice and the things that they had to do.
No, absolutely. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. But, yeah, from the – because I mentioned something. Cause primarily, I'm from Wisconsin, right, and primarily I watch the Packers and look at that stuff, and I remember someone had said something like, well, isn't that a reach for him to take him at – I think it was at 29, the Packers – or 28, the Packers, second first-rounder. I was like, well – he ain't a top 30 player in this draft,
right.
but you're probably going to have to take him top 30 because if he hits, he's going to be top five at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that risk there.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So do you – all right, well, let me ask you this, okay, because there's – people have different ideas of, okay, you don't draft this position in the first round. You don't draft that position in the first round. What are your thoughts on interior offensive line in the first round, especially guard?
I mean, as far as things go, they're still not getting paid as much as tackles. So I really don't understand people's apprehension with that. You know, people talk, well, like that people are more worried about taking a player for what they might be in 6 years than what they are for today. More often than not, it seems like. But I mean, as far as you take a good football player where you're at, right. And you see it, right. The Titans see it in the division, right. The difference that in a couple of years, the difference that Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson made along that Indianapolis offensive line, and now all of a sudden they draft Jonathan Taylor in the second round, and they got Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines, and all of a sudden they're a huge pain to deal with, right? And so I do not buy into the you can only take certain players in certain rounds thing. I understand, at the very least, I understand where people are coming from as far as maybe running back or maybe you know, and not in this case so much, but if there's a nose tackle that doesn't provide a ton of pass rush upside, I can understand, you know, the hesitance there. But I mean, if you can get Zion Johnson in the first round, if you can take Kenyon Green in the first round, absolutely, you don't think twice about it, and you get a big, physical, nasty dude, smart dudes as well, and you add him to your football team, and you let him protect Ryan Tannehill, and you let him block for Derrick Henry, and you don't think twice about it. You know, you made the right call.
So those are some of the first round options, but I like what you're able to do as far as, you know, you scan the whole land and you know prospects that are outside of the top 50. So I want to get some of your gems, some of your guys that you feel would be good for the Titans. Before I get that, what is your opinion on Marquise Hayes? Like, I feel that he's a really good player, but it just doesn't seem like the attention is being given to him.
Yeah, I agree with it. And he's got everything. He's got the physical profile. He's got those really long arms. I think what Marquise Haynes is kind of suffering from is, and I've mentioned this a lot, and this happened to a lot of guys, I think the normal fan probably don't realize this, but this draft class is probably bigger from a size standpoint than, I guess, I don't know in the past, but like last year, for instance, there were like between like 500 and 600 players in the whole draft class, right? Because of COVID, everyone came back, everyone opted out, everyone whatever. This year, the draft is huge. Like, this is like 3 years worth of guys in one class, right? Because you got all the 7th and 6th year guys that came back from COVID. You got still the early enrollees in this class, right? Like those 3rd and 4th year juniors and 3rd year sophomores. You have those guys, and you have the guys who are actually supposed to be seniors in this class. So I think that a lot of spots and we're going to get to this with some of my other guys I got pinged up here. A couple of them weren't even invited to the combine. And I think in a normal year, that wouldn't even have been a question, but just the amount of depth in this class, because you've got 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd year guys, maybe even a couple 7th year guys, depending on the spot. I think there's just a lot of those dudes kind of get lost in the shuffle and just not enough attention being paid to them. Not, you know, obviously that's not the case by NFL teams. Right. And we'll see that all kind of, the cream will rise to the top on the field. But I think that's the case for a lot of these dudes in the media, is just that they can't, you know, they can't have as much attention paid to them as they probably should.
And we're talking to Owen Reese, scouting assistant for Optimum Scouting, as well as the East West Shrine Bowl Who are some of these guys that, you feel are some gems?
So I got three guys for you. They were all out in Las Vegas at the East-West Shrine Game, and there are three guys that I think make a lot of sense for Tennessee. The first one I got is Cordell Volson. So he played tackle at North Dakota State. So the Titans brass will be familiar with him with Dylan Radins last year. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a guard in the NFL. He's a guy, he was a five-year starter out at North Dakota State. If it can play tackle or guard, I wouldn't even be surprised if he's a guy that teams want to try at center. Right, I think he's really smart. He's a really cerebral player, very fundamentally sound, plays with great technique. You know the physicality and that finishing mindset's always going to be there coming from North Dakota State. And what I was most impressed with was his aptitude in pass protection, right? I think these folks in on the small schools, right, like you know this, North Dakota State is maybe the most impressive rushing football team in all of college football, regardless of level or division competition. And so they don't have to throw it a lot, or when they do, a lot of times it's very rarely off a drop back passing, right? It's a lot of play action. It's a lot of quick hitter stuff. So his ability to bounce back and forth from not only guard and tackle during the week at the Shrine Bowl, but also from the left and right side of the offensive line impressed me quite a bit. The first day was, I don't want to say bad, but it was inconsistent. But that second and third day and fourth day of the practice, he locked right in. And it completely turned the tide. There was little doubt that he was one of the best linemen there. Something I think John Robinson would appreciate, he joked around with me during the week, Cordell did, and he said, we run an RPO offense. We run power often, right? And I think that's something with someone like blocking for Derrick Henry. That makes a lot of sense with me, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of just that big physical body blow guy. Another guy I think that they – and I guess – I know that they were impressed with in interviews because I was in the room and I got to hear some of the reactions. And I talked to you about this a little bit. It was Brock Hoffman, the center from Virginia Tech. He's a guy, he's about 6'3 and 315 pounds. He is physical. He's nasty. He kind of warmed up to me throughout the week, but he's definitely kind of a hard dude to talk to at times. Just because he's kind of one of those linemen, right? He's kind of ornery, kind of defensive, but he was a guy I really enjoyed watching play at the game. Like I said, I know Tennessee was impressed with him in interviews. I remember he said at one point, he's like, I'm just here to put people in the ground. That's all I really want to do here. And then another thing that I really liked about him that I heard him talking to one of the other guys about, so he and Jeffrey Gunter from Coastal Carolina were both at the Shrine Game. They were the two, they were a part of one of those first recruiting classes there when things really started rolling for them. They were the two lowest rated recruits in their incoming class. And they're probably the only two that are, those two and Isaiah Likely will get drafted, right? But those are guys, I thought that was cool, that he plays with a lot of, he's got a chip on his shoulder for sure. He plays with a lot of pride. He takes a lot of pride in what he does. So I thought that was really cool. The last name that I will give you is a tackle. His name is Ryan Vandermark out of UConn. He was a bit of a late bloomer. I talked to him a bit about it. Family didn't have a ton as far as paying to send him to school to play football out of high school. So he went to a prep school, and he got a scholarship to a prep school, and he was able to get a scholarship to UConn out of there. But he played quite a bit as a true freshman at about 277 pounds, but has now worked his way up to about 305 or 308. He's all a 6'6.5", and it was UConn's one of those programs where they kind of get a bad rep right now, but when you're going to go there, you're going to play a lot and you're going to develop. And I think that's the biggest thing that he talked about, right, is the development from being a freshman to a senior there, how much he got to play and how much he got to grow and really kind of continue to build on that skill set while he was there. And it showed. I was shocked, maybe even more so than Brock Hoffman, I was shocked that Ryan Vandermark didn't get an invite to the combine. He's a good athlete. He's a tall guy. He was a volleyball player for most of his life. Before turning to football late in high school. He's a guy, he moves really well in pass pro, and he played with a bit of a physical edge. He wasn't anything over the top, but he certainly wasn't let defensive players get that last shove in during a rep. So those are a few guys I thought to me really stood out and kind of yelled at me, or I could identify them as, like, those could be Tennessee. They could play for the Titans. Those are guys that would fit in Tennessee.
And another guy that I wanted to ask you about, and he was out there, Alec Lindstrom. What are your thoughts on him and how that week was and just how he could be as a player?
Absolutely. So Alec Lindstrom, so I for the Shrine game, I actually do the ACC, right? So I was fairly familiar with Brock, and I was very familiar with Alec Lindstrom as well. He's one of the first guys that we invited to the game. And he's a guy, his older brother, obviously, is the left guard, or the right guard, excuse me, for the Falcons. His dad played in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I think knowing that was one of the most impressive things, because you immediately know it when you see him at practice. He is probably maxed out physically. He's somewhere in that 6'3", 300 pound, 295 pound range. But he is the smartest dude out there at any given time, right? He sees the defense incredibly well. He's over-communicating with his line mates all the time. And just one of those things where he's extremely knowledgeable about the game. You can tell he's very heady about it. There's a lot of preparation that goes in there. And because I think he knows to an extent, not that he's physically limited, but he's not going to be the most impressive dude walking off the bus. And so he's a big-time effort guy. He's a big-time smarts guy. And then that translates. He is a good athlete. I said he plays on a little bit on the lighter side. He is a good athlete. And he's a guy, I think, that he, like I said, he might not have a ton of upside, but he's already, like, he is what he is, right? You're going to be able to take him, and he might be a backup center. And unfortunately, due to that size, he's probably a center only. But he's a guy that you're going to be able to plug him in there. And if you need him to play for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I don't think you're going to miss much of a beat. He's a guy that I was really impressed with. He and Zach Tom, so the way we had the teams split up in Las Vegas is we had one team that was more of a gap team, and there's a team that was more of a zone team, like a split zone team.
Okay.
And Zach Tom from Wake Forest and Alec Lindstrom were both supposed to be on the zone team. However, due to some roster attrition and some shuffling and moving around, they both ended up on the gap team. Right, so those two guys are around 295, 300 pounds, much more suited for the zone skill set. So it also said a lot to me that they just came in and competed. They didn't complain. They didn't whine about being, right, like the first day of practice, they line up, and you've got Noah Ellis from Idaho, who's 367 pounds, and you've got Taylen Humphrey from Louisiana, where our guy Emory Hunt played. He's 349 pounds. You got Marquand McCall from Kentucky, who's down to 348 pounds,
down,
right? And those guys never said a word and never complained about playing these dudes that are 40, 50, 60, 70 pounds heavier than they are. So that said a lot to me about their competitive mindset and their makeup right there, was that this is very clearly a mismatch, but I don't really care.
See, those are some things that, you know, normally we get overlooked. I'm glad you pointed that out, and you have that experience of that inside knowledge of seeing that. Now, one of the other things that you've done in addition to scouting, like you've been in the coaching business, right? And obviously we know Quinn Miners is a guy that, you know, I hope I pronounce this. Did I pronounce his name right?
Yep. Yes, he did.
Okay, good, good. We know he's a guy that you worked with a lot, and now he's in the league with the Broncos. So I want to ask you this. If you put on your coaching hat and you look at Dylan Radins, first, where do you think he should play? And second, from your, I'm not sure how much you watched the Titans, and he only played one game, in fact, but so we'll revert back to him as a prospect. What does he have to do to get prepared to be a starter?
So from what I remember, Dylan Radins, he's a guy that was, he was a bit light, honestly, for like one of those MDSU guys, right? And the mindset's always there. That I'm certainly not undermining that. Right. But I remember that I was one of the first thoughts, like, this dude's got to get bigger and stronger.
Yep.
And that's something I think that I would assume he's going to have to continue, because if he's not going to, then he's going to kind of probably lock himself out at that tackle spot, right? Mm-hmm. Where he's going to have to, because I don't know if we want him dealing with, some of these dudes on the inside. I don't know if I don't want him trying to block DJ Reader of the Bengals, right, or whatever on the inside. So he's going to have to play. I think, because my initial thought when I saw him last year was like, he's going to make a really good left guard for somebody, but he's going to have to get a little bit bigger first. And so to me, that was what I was kind of had him penciled in at. I know a lot of Green Bay fans, right, just because of where I'm at, they really liked him. They kind of saw him as a tackle. Again, I'm not as – I apologize for not being as familiar, right? Is Tennessee still as wide zone heavy now that Arthur Smith is gone?
They still run a lot of wide zone.
So, I mean, he could be okay, but that was kind of more my thought, right? Like, unless he's got to get stronger, but, like, that's the right scheme for him. And then the other thing, and I'll say, and again, this isn't a knock on them just because they aren't asked to do it a ton, but I would assume that he's going to have to continue to improve and develop in pass protection, right? That's just something that I remember from the little bit I saw at the Senior Bowl. Unfortunately, I would have been outside my mind if I was down there last year, but I had COVID. So I wasn't able to go down there to watch Quinn. But from what I remember seeing of Raiden was that all the movement skill is all there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's a lack of strength, but just kind of continuing to get more comfortable in that world of playing tackle, playing pass pro out there in a drop back situation, which NDSU don't do a ton. So to me, I apologize if that's not as helpful.
No, that's excellent. I think
he's going to, unless he gets bigger and stronger, I think he's going to have to stay at tackle. But then that's where that pass pro help comes in. And then I wonder too, right? I know Tennessee has some history of doing this when Jack Conklin was there, but then that kind of hamstrings you a little bit because you're probably going to have to keep the back over on that side a lot, or a tight end or a wing, mm-hmm. something to kind of help him out a little bit in pass pro. But I think when I saw him the first time, I was like, this guy's going to make a really nice left guard, but he's got to get stronger first. So if that's not, if he's unable to do that, I think he probably ends up staying at tackle, and I think he'll be fine. But I don't think that's something where, again, like that could end up being a position that you're just kind of always looking to upgrade, right? It's not there's nothing wrong with Dylan Raiden, but you can always do a little bit better than Dylan Raiden.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I it looks like that's where he's going to go to right tackle, but the draft will tell us where they really truly see him, because we'll see what they pick in the first round and, you know, in the third round and so on and so forth. So Owen, I appreciate you coming on. Keep up the good work, man. It was good catching up with you in Indy, and I told you we were going to do this, so here we are.
Absolutely, man. I'm happy to do it. Good to talk to you. Always good when we see each other in person, but this is the next best thing. So thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
For sure. Take care, man.
Yeah, you too.
So that was Owen Reese talking shop. Always good to get him on, just talk offensive line. I'm glad we were able to do that. We got Mark Schofield on as well, NFL Wire, USA Today, Digital Media Group. Got to get into that Tannehill talk. We'll see what happens next year. And, of course, Chris Sanders, forever Titans receiver, and Elijah Campbell making this thing happen. Enjoy the draft, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, we will be back. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in. God bless and good night.